Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio, talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up.
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show. 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of 12 noon, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. Moments ago on the Bernard McGuirk and Sid Rosenberg show, the dullard, Jill, a.k.a. Flirty Flipper, their producer, said, duh, it's Friday the 13th. It's unlucky today. And exactly what it has been universally over time from those with African, European roots, other roots, coming to this new Western Hemisphere, whether you believe it was Christopher Columbus or whoever who first began that wave. It is Friday the 13th, and there are a lot of people who are ducking for cover. There are a lot of people who are not going to work, flying, conducting business, trading stocks. They're just sitting on their tuchus, probably listening to us now and saying, where's Ebony K. Williams? Well, she's away today, and I think it's as a result of the call of actress Rose McGowan. She has asked all female users of Twitter, and let's face it, nobody is more of a Twitter queen than Ebony K. Williams. She has asked them to suspend their use of Twitter today in protest to what happened to her yesterday when she was shut down by Twitter for exposing Amazon, Jeff Bezos, and the head of his film studio for knowing all about Harvey Weinstein because she told them, and they refused to do anything about it because they said to her, yeah, but those were just accusations. So instead of Ebony K. Williams boycotting Twitter today, who knows, in parts unknown, we have our political director of operations here at WABC, Rita Cosby.
Who also uses Twitter. And I'm glad to be with you, Curtis, on such an interesting day with Friday the 13th. Hopefully I'm not jinxed by being with you.
Not at all, because you are featured in today's New York Daily News for the interview you had with actress Anne Wilding, who apparently was warned about Harvey Weinstein's predatory ways. Could you sort of introduce us to those cuts a little bit and give us a little bit of a preview, because we're really going to go whole hog into this in the 1 o'clock hour.
Yeah, and this is wild, Curtis, because, of course, the whole thing with Harvey Weinstein is just exploding. I mean, there are now dozens of women who've come forward. You talked about Rose McGowan and all the stuff that's happening with Twitter and all these new layers that are happening. And Anna Wilding did an exclusive interview with me where she said that she was, and by the way, just to give some context, I have known Anna Wilding for a long time. So it's not just sort of somebody coming out of the blue. This is a person who I've known for decades. And so this is a reputable actress. This is someone who's a director. She's a producer. She goes to Cannes, like many of the actors do there in France. It's all these hoity-toity parties, a lot of socializing, a lot of different things. So she is there in Cannes, and it's in 1999. And she said that Harvey Weinstein, she was talking to him. Of course, she knew who he was. He was head of Miramax at the time and very powerful, of course, in the industry, even back then. Of course, certainly is now, although questionable as of today. But she said that she ended up talking with him and was going to go into a meeting with him. And she said, you know, didn't think anything about it at the time. And then suddenly two colleagues of her, two male colleagues, came over and said, that ain't going to happen. Here's a little bit of what she told me.
I found myself at the Cannes Film Festival, which I was going to every year, at the bottom of an elevator with Harvey on my way up for what I thought was a meeting. And it was just Harvey and I alone. I don't know why he was alone or why I was alone. We were both people who had a lot of people around us usually. And we were alone at this elevator, and I was about to go up for a meeting with him, and he was saying hello, and literally two colleagues of mine, two male friends, came up to me and literally stood between me and Harvey. They literally barged their way between me and Harvey and said, "No, Harvey, not Anna," or "No, Harvey, not this one." It was quite extraordinary, and I walked away with my two friends and did not go up the elevator with Harvey, and I'm glad now because I was quite a strong woman. It wouldn't have occurred to me that he would even dare try that with me because I'd made it quite known around town that I wasn't a casting couch girl.
And then she said to me afterwards that they came over to her afterwards and said, "You are never to be alone with Harvey Weinstein, that it is not safe to be alone with Harvey Weinstein." And again, nothing happened with her, but she said it was a common, known, you know, worst kept secret in Hollywood that you should not be alone if you're a woman with Harvey Weinstein. This is 1999, Curtis.
Well, maybe Meryl Streep needs to hear that because the queen of Hollywood apparently was dull to all of that information, as were so many in Hollywood who claim they just didn't know. They just didn't know. And yet it was common knowledge.
Yeah, and she also said, by the way, too, that she said agents and other people, even beyond this event there that she's talking about in Cannes, she said all these agents, all these managers, these people that she knew, it was just that they also told her the same thing. And here she is an actress. She knew who Ashley Judd was. She certainly knew Ashley. She said, in fact, that Ashley Judd coming out gave her confidence to come out. And I think it's just an indication, Curtis, that the floodgates are going to open up, because here's Anna Wilding saying it was common practice. You know that there's many more people who'll probably come out with different claims as well. And was it, when you say that, did it sound like, okay, well, they knew what was to come and that they at least anticipated that something like that was going to happen?
They absolutely did. And they pulled me aside later and they spoke to me afterwards directly and they said, "Anna, you are not safe to be alone with Harvey." And they were very clear with me not to ever be alone with Harvey. They were very clear that I was not to sort of, it was not safe to be with Harvey. And I think that was probably one of those prominent eye-openers I had about how predatory his behavior was actually.
Pretty scary stuff. And again, she says, Curtis, that it was common knowledge. Everybody knew. And here's a woman who said, look, thank goodness. And she said, she also talked about the other thing that, the layers, too, of like, look, she said, I was basically blackballed in a number of different projects and a number of things because I wouldn't play game with just Harvey, but also other people, too. She talks about how pervasive, and when she uses the words here to describe Harvey Weinstein and others, she says rampant predatory behavior. Pretty strong words.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And now we learn that the Miramax company was complicit in enabling this perv, because when Harvey Weinstein signed his personal contract in 2015, it specified how he could violate the Weinstein company's code of conduct if he reimbursed them for any settlements or judgments. So if he decided to perv on women improperly, as long as he shelled out the money for the damages, it was okay.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable that it was in the contract, according to TMZ, that no matter what happens, and then again, that covers, of course, any allegations of sexual assault, and now there are three allegations of rape. I mean, this is serious stuff. And to have that in a contract, okay, you can do whatever you want as long as you pay for it. There's a guy who has such money. Money is not an object with this guy. It's like, okay, well, shell it out. I'm covered.
And then here's Harvey Weinstein outside of his daughter's home in California before he headed to the sex addict clinic in parts unknown in Arizona as he spoke to TMZ.
We're glad to see you doing okay.
Thank you.
Guys, I'm not doing okay.
You're not?
I'm trying. I gotta get help, guys. Good. You know what? We all make mistakes. Second chance, I hope. Okay?
No problem.
Thanks, guys. And you know what? I've always been loyal to you guys.
Awesome.
Not like those pricks who treat you like I've been a good guy.
You know, it's the same thing again. Oh, everybody makes a mistake. But this is, so far, 32 women, Curtis. It's 32 mistakes.
He's the good guy here.
Right. I've been good to you. And in fact, you know what's so interesting, Curtis, when I hear all this, too? It reminds me, because all the stories about him were, if you started to write a story, there are these allegations that he'd call up, you know, the boss and say, hey, you know, I can help you here. I can do this. That's even what he's trying to do now, you can tell. I mean, he's like, I've always been good to you. Remember me. I've been good to you, or I can bring weighing you down. I can help you. He's still trying to bargain.
And then in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll also be talking about the flip side of the casting couch in Hollyweird as Dawson's Creek star James Vanderbeek talks about how he was being preyed on by powerful men. Well, we know there's a whole film that was done on this. So the casting couch has been used by both sides of those folks who are either heterosexual or homosexual. And man, we're talking about a tsunami of allegations that are coming forth. In fact, I've heard from people out in California who advise agents of top stars and starlets that there has been a rush to go knock on doors to find previous victims of sexual harassment, molestation, perving, rape, so that payoffs can be made now to make sure that they remain quiet.
Yeah, you know who the happy people are, the PIs out there in L.A. and also the attorneys out there. But you're right, there's this hush of cake. Don't get it out. I don't want to be in the paper. I don't want to be in the paper.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Randy in Cranford. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here today at WABC. Randy?
Hi, Randy.
Hello to you both. I want to say you guys have a great show. I know that Ebony is being substituted by Rita Cosby, but it's a great show.
Thank you.
Before I say anything, I want to apologize to Curtis. I spoke to you the other day, and I said you were a sad excuse for a human being. And whether I believe that or not, it was a rotten thing to say, and I'm sorry.
Well, it's okay. In light of the fact that I think Harvey Weinstein is worse than me, I accept that.
That's a high bar, worse. Curtis.
I accept that, Randy.
10 times worse. But what I want to say is this. Harvey Weinstein's going to be the scapegoat that lets Hollywood say we're cleaning up our act. And the bottom line is the only reason this is out in the news is because Harvey's power in Hollywood is over, and he's no longer a power broker because he hasn't been making any movies or money in the past 5 years. And it's going to be business as usual. The powerful will keep doing what they do in Hollywood. And these women and men, because there have been men who've been subjected to it too, won't say anything for fear of having their careers destroyed.
See, I kind of disagree, Randy, because I do agree that there will be a lot swept under the rug. And like Curtis was just saying, I think there's all these sort of secret payouts going on now. But I also think that it's bringing attention to it. And there's a lot of people who, and some of the names that I know who have come forward, who I don't think ever would have spoken, and now they have the confidence to do so. And I actually think short-term the floodgates are going to open.
Not only that, but if you are a perv, let's say producer, director, or high-powered guy out there, gay or straight, you're going to wonder if the person is wired up.
Yeah.
Like the aspiring Italian starlet was, who came back with the NYPD sex crime unit to get Harvey Weinstein's statements on tape that should have gotten him indicted by Cyrus White Shoes Vance, the district attorney, who today is staring out of his window down near 100 Center Street and looking at a group of outraged female victims of violent sexual crimes who are calling for his head, calling for him to step down or to somehow be sacked. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
So as we go out to Las Vegas, the city where whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, I understand, Rita Cosby, there's somebody who is MIA.
Yeah, this is a wild one, Curtis. Jesus Campos, he was the security guard, remember, at the Mandalay Bay, which is owned by MGM. And he's the one, at first they thought he was the big hero, that he was shot at, and that he was the one who stopped the shooter from the mass killing with all the people that were killed, that horrible case, as we know, of all the killing that took place there in Las Vegas. And it sounded like, oh, he was this great guy, and that was the way it was presented by the sheriff. And now, then we just heard yesterday that, wait a minute, no, he actually got shot before the mass shooting. So then it was like, well, wait, he didn't stop it? What happened? And now we just found out in the last few minutes, apparently he was all set to do a whole bunch of interviews with television stations. And suddenly in the last few minutes, right before he's about to sit down with all, I think it was 5 different interviews, he's MIA. So here is this guy who, this case just gets weirder and weirder, Curtis. And as soon as I heard the sheriff, it was about 2 days ago where he came out and said, no, we just got the timeline change that the security guard didn't shoot him and stopped the shooting and it didn't happen after, it happened before. I was like, wait a minute. So this guy gets shot in the hallway. Apparently 200 bullet holes, rounds are coming through, shooting this guy, gets shot in the leg. He has a radio. So how come he didn't stop the shooting? How come they didn't storm the room if indeed it happened beforehand? Something was weird. And now it gets even weirder that this security guard, who was at first looked at as a hero, now it's questionable what happened. The time, they can't get the time frames. MGM is saying it was only 40 seconds before the shooting happened, after he was shot. You know, it's like, how come you can't figure this out? This is the weirdest thing. And now this security guard is MIA. There's something fishy. Go ahead.
I can figure it out. Even though this occurred yesterday, we had those battery of interviews lined up. It's the precursor to Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's why. I should have just asked you. You could have summed it up for me.
On Friday the 13th, some people stay home.
And so he decided,
they don't travel. They don't do anything. They don't answer the telephone.
Maybe that's it.
They don't do interviews. Even people like myself, if you lens lice and you make love to every microphone or camera that's stuck in your face.
I was going to talk to you about that habit of yours, by the way.
Yes, yes. But
that's for another day.
The fact is, on Friday the 13th, some people were paralyzed in fear. And remember, this guy was in a room ready to do the interview with his union president and members of the union. They went outside to do a pre-interview, you know, drums rolling. Okay, here comes the security guard, the hero of the hour. They walked back in the room to escort him out before the phalanx, the battery of microphones and cameras. And they look in the room, and he's disappeared.
So maybe he looked and saw that it was Friday the 13th. By the way, he's got to come up with something. That's the only thing that may work.
he completely disappeared. And now they've gone on a door-by-door, house-by-house search in the greater Las Vegas area, Clark County area. They can't find the guy.
How can you, first of all, mess up on the timetable? You either know if you were shot and then the worst mass shooting in U.S. history happens, or it was the other way around. So first of all, as soon as I heard that, I was like, well, wait a minute, there's something fishy. Well, you know, and look, if you're a security guard and this guy was capable, he was shot in the leg. You say, guess what?
Well,
200 bullets came at me. Everybody stormed the door.
Read it.
Hello.
You can't cheat in Vegas on the floor of these casinos. Even the down low casinos, you know, for the out the cockers, you know, with the penny.
The cameras.
One on bandits.
Come on.
You can't cheat in a casino in Vegas, and they can't find this guy?
Come on. Well, first of all, the fact that there was a question, it was so interesting when the sheriff came out with the change in the timetable. It was like, oh, and by the way, there's this little change in the time. You know, it's like, what?
Well, the sheriff has had like three different press conferences a day.
Yeah.
He's become like a fixture on TV. You can't go to an all-news channel without seeing the sheriff of Clark County giving a press conference in terms of what transpired, the timeline. Well, guess what? He has promised the mother of all press conferences later today that I know even Ken Duffy is going to be following.
Can't wait for
There's
that
no
one.
Doubt about that, because you're right. The timeline is all screwy.
How can you not figure that out? Give me a break. When you hear that there's a discrepancy, you know, you and I have covered so many cases
Sure.
through the years, Curtis. I have never seen a case with so many screwy that can't figure out the time. You know what time something happened, and you know if a mass shooting happened before or after they opened fire. Give me a break.
Was he the first to get shot, or was he shot after others had gotten shot down in the lot, and then the gunman turned on the door and just unleashed, firepower that went through the door and shot him. I'm trying to figure this out.
But then we know also that he was apparently able, according to the first story, telling other people in the hotel. So you don't go, wait a minute, this guy, suddenly every day 200 rounds come at you from a random hotel room? Mm. And then authorities said, we don't know where the shooting happened. That's why it took us a while. We didn't know what hotel. We didn't know what room. Give me a break. There is something so fishy with this.
You know what? You're our political director, Rita Cosby, so you have no juice in this regard.
Oh, no, I got a lot of juice in this one. I have covered so many crime stories. I've never been a guardian angel, but I've covered a lot of crime stories.
But in this regard, we're going to have to turn to our news director, Noam Layden.
We have to?
And he is going to have to assign Ken Duffy, the card shark, to go out in Vegas and track down this story as an intrepid reporter, because we know you're a degenerate five-card poker player, right?
He's a gamer.
Yeah, see?
Gamer
so you go out there, you hang out there, right? And you get the information and you do your updates and find out where the hell this private security guard is.
Yeah, give me a break. Ken Duffy, give us the lowdown. You're a news guy.
All right. But anyway, right now, give us the headlines and news up.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments. The new midday show.
Up on the line, the law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
I hate this pedophile on a pedestal, but couldn't figure on any re-entry song.
I love Michael Jackson. Come on.
Good. Go visit him at his gravesite.
While
you're there,
him.
You can visit Marilyn Monroe and Hugh Hefner, right? He's probably on top of her in her crypt at this moment. But anyway.
Ouch.
As Rita Cosby is in the house, she's our political director, and you can hear Rita. She has her own show on Sunday.
Yep, Sunday. I got two. I have 6 and 11 a.m., and we have more of our interview with Anna Wilding, which is going to be great. The Harvey Weinstein latest person who says that she was told stay away from him. It's not safe to be with Harvey Weinstein.
Right, and we're going to revisit that in the 1 o'clock hour. Ebony K. Williams is away today, so Rita is in the house.
In the house.
And actually, it is appropriate because not only the fact that you have the exclusive interview with Anna Wilding. Well, I'm pronouncing that correct, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's absolutely
Why
right.
Why was I thinking winter? But anyway, Anna
That's
Wilding.
That's another one.
Right.
Another woman.
There's
another
so many, Anna. Right?
So
there's
many
like 32.
Annas.
They're coming out of the woodwork.
So many Annas. So little time.
But you anchored our mayoral debate coverage this past Tuesday involving Comrade Bill de Blasio, Nicole Malliotakis, and Bo Dietl. They were on the New York One stage. Errol Lewis was the moderator. And at times it turned into a three-ring circus.
Oh, my God. From the get-go, by the way, from the get-go. In fact, remember, even before Bill de Blasio even got to do his opening remarks, it was boos, it was cheers. It was like, it was one of the wildest debates I've ever seen.
And the reality is that I had been with Bo Dietl on the sidelines of the annual Christopher Columbus Day Parade the day before Monday up Fifth Avenue.
You mean the Indigenous People's Day Parade?
Over my dead body. But he was booing de Blasio from one side. I was booing him from the other side. So we were like a chorus, although he's not my candidate.
Who
my candidate
louder?
For mayor is Sal Albanese. I was louder.
That's what I figured. All
I was
right.
much louder.
All right. That's what I figured.
But Bo told me, along with his campaign manager that I've known for years, John Hagerty, who happened to have gone to jail during the Bloomberg campaign for taking monies from Michael Bloomberg. But he knows his stuff. He assured me that Bo would be cool, calm, and collected, that he would not be studying for the debate like Trump.
Right.
That he would just be Bo. And I said to Bo, you're not going to attack Nicole, right? Because that's not going to look good. You know, a guy preying on a woman on the stage. Said, no. I'm going after Big Bird. I said, but you realize this is the first time people are going to be seeing you on the big stage. Bo, as much as you think everybody knows you, you know, a lot of people couldn't pick you out of a lineup if their life depended on it. You really got to come across with some ideas. Oh, no. I got a whole batch of ideas. Well, he fell right into the trap. The trap was when he appeared before a judge over an electoral dispute. Because Bo, he's special ed. He has difficulty when signing up to a party. You know, he tried to sign up as a Democrat. He couldn't fill out the paperwork. Then he wanted to be a Republican. He couldn't fill out the paperwork.
But now, again, in defense of Bo claims that obviously it was the mayor who was, you know, trying to do some funny business on the signatures. Because, of course, look, on the flip side, the last thing the mayor wanted or anybody. And we saw it at our Pubs and Politics event. Remember, we did a big fiery Pubs and Politics event. It was actually kind of a preview to this debate that took place this week. And that was in September on the 14th. And I saw Bo. He was just going full throttle for Nicole Malliotakis. He also was fighting with Sal too.
And my candidate.
Sal, who's a little more of a milder guy. The two of them remember like, shut up. It was like, it was wild. But those guys, there was this moment. Everybody wanted to see the debate, to see how de Blasio, how the mayor would handle Bo, because Bo is a wild card. It's like the Republican debates,
right,
where you wanted to see what are they going to do with Trump.
What you have to do if you're Bo is stay away from talking about the mayor's wife, which he did once before, and it caused him considerable harm.
Yeah, that's a hard one to explain, and right. He tried to explain it away. You can't.
Stay away from the woman.
Stay away.
He promised me he would. He did not. In fact, he actually added insult to injury towards the end of the debate.
All I said was judge was very familiar looking as the mayor's wife with two beautiful eyes and a smile, and they looked very similar. I never used the word African-American, so how dare you use that, and how dare you even imply that? My point, okay, take it easy there, de Blasio.
And then de Blasio went on a rant defending his wife. So he seemed like he was gallant, chivalrous, you know. He was like, yeah, defending his wife.
And he also said it's un-American, too. Remember, he used the line, the mayor de Blasio looked at him and he said, you know, going after someone's ethnicity is un-American. And he really went after Bo.
All Bo should have done is fallen on the sword, apologize since she was in the audience.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, Mrs. de Blasio. It was wrong for me to make that comparison. I very humbly apologize. And move on. Instead, he starts screaming, hollering, hooting, and, raising his volume that Errol Lewis, the moderator, turned his microphone off. And
absolutely.
After that, it became uncontrollable. But the tone was set by the mayor. Everyone knew coming into this, the Bo people knew, Nicole Malliotakis people knew, that he was going to try to paint them as Trump.
It was so predictable, too, Curtis, right? Because he'd been saying it all along.
And this is what he said.
There are elections where people feel that the candidates are all alike. You're not going to have that problem this time. My two opponents are right-wing Republicans who voted for Donald Trump.
Okay, so everyone knows going into this debate, he's going to try to paint them as Trump light, that's Nicole, and mini-me Trump,
yes,
that's Bo.
Clearly.
So let me tell you how Nicole handled this. Grace Rao, respected reporter from New York One, then picked up on that, asked her the same question, and Nicole Malliotakis, who I say is not ready for primetime, had a complete meltdown.
We're going to start with Ms. Malliotakis. A follow-up about Donald Trump. You voted for him last year, but you can't seem to make up your mind about him. For a while, it looked like you were trying to run away from the president. You told me at one point that you couldn't think of a single thing that he was doing well. And then you were suddenly embracing him, offering support when he demanded that NFL players who kneel during the national anthem be fired. So my question is, are you trying to have it always when it comes to President Trump?
I gotta be honest with you, Grace. I feel that you're carrying the mayor's water right now. And I know
Yeah, the audience didn't, and also Curtis, of all people, with Grace Rao, she's the one who filed the suit, the Freedom of Information Act, all the different suits against the mayor.
Oh, yeah.
So it was interesting. Sometimes that works. Look, I've been in these debates where you've seen where you go after the person and you go after the media. It works for Donald Trump, but it doesn't work for most other people.
It was a disaster.
It was a mess.
Nicole Malliotakis.
And like you said, she should have known it was coming from the very beginning. We're in a very Democratic city. You look at the votes in New York City, it's like 6-1 Democrats. If I were Bill de Blasio and I would say Trump, I would even say more Trump.
Of course.
You know, it's a given. And she knew it was coming.
And all she had to do was say, yes, I voted for Trump. I didn't support him initially in the primary.
I'm a Republican.
I was for Marco Rubio. I voted for him, not Hillary. I've disagreed with him publicly. I've supported him publicly. But we've just discussed a major part of this debate was the crumbling NYCHA infrastructure of public housing. 90% of that budget is funded through Washington, Dr. Ben Carson's office at HUD, and the president. And if you don't have ongoing communication or negotiations with them, they're going to cut the funding. And NYCHA is going to completely fall apart because the city only contributes 10% to its yearly maintenance. And then there's infrastructure issues and other issues as to why you have to have an open line of communication with the Trump administration, which de Blasio doesn't have. But she didn't go there.
And the other thing she also should have said, I am a Republican.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think a Republican's going to say? I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well,
you know, she didn't go. She said, she should have said, I'm a Republican. And exactly what you said, I got to have good relations with D.C.
I'll tell you why she didn't say that, because she hired on big bucks Hank Shinecoff, a Democrat, liberal, progressive advisor before this debate. And everyone sort of shook their head and say, he's going to be preparing her with a liberal, progressive agenda. She's the Conservative Party candidate. And her head was muddled with all kinds of information. It was obvious. But worse was Bo Dietl's response to being a Trump supporter.
Well, first of all, I got to clear something up. I'm a registered Democrat, and I do not like Donald Trump, and I don't like what he's done. And I came out publicly and called him a lying narcissist. So I take exception to that, Mr. Mayor. Now, as far as it goes, I did vote for him, but I would take that vote back for tomorrow. All right.
Now, how dumb is that?
Right.
When he has spent so many hours here at WABC. First with Imus in the Morning, where he's been a fixture for years. Then with Bernard McGurk, Sid Rosenberg, and with me on the drive home at 5.
And he's been with me for many years,
right,
too.
Touting Donald Trump for president.
Right. Suddenly you have this epiphany.
Right.
And they got to, you know what you said, they should have figured out a way to just kind of dance around it. Say, listen, yeah, I was a Republican in Bo's case, you know. Now I'm a Democrat, you know, now I'm third party, you know. But I don't agree with him on certain things. I agree with him on others. He did get to Bo's credit, he did get to at one point, look, you got to have good relations with Washington, just as you said. And I think he did kind of come back to it. On the other side, I also want to give a little bit of a kudos to Nicole, because I do think she was better prepared. When the whole thing happened with the pubs and politics that we did with her and Bo Dietl, she was totally blindsided by him just going after her and going after her. And he was relentless. I mean, it is a hard thing to do when someone is doing that. I mean, he was just hammering her, and it was all eyes on her because de Blasio wasn't at our event. But I do think she was more effective in at least getting answers. And she did get some decent jabs in with the mayor, where she said, are you afraid of Governor Cuomo? She had some good highlights. So it wasn't all bad.
Right. But the bottom line is, most people looking at that debate did not know who Nicole Malliotakis or Bo Dietl was. It was their opportunity to explain to the watchers and listeners, this is who I am. This is what I stand for. This is what I would do differently than Mayor de Blasio.
Yes, they didn't come out with, here's my plan. I can criticize him.
I can tell
but
you
yeah,
why.
Yeah, because what they
why.
Don't have it is what you think?
They don't have it. Crane's New York came out with a major devastating article against Nicole Malliotakis, saying she appeared before them, had no plans. And we know Bo Dietl has no plans. Bo is just boisterous, bombastic, and Bo. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
You for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise.
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
No Ebony K. Williams today. Instead, it's our political director, Rita Cosby, in the house.
In the house.
And in fact, in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll be playing her exclusive interview with, why do I keep mixing her up with Anna Winter? Anna Wilding.
Anna Wilding, actress, who now says that she was told never be alone with Harvey Weinstein.
Well, that's because Anna Winter is Weinstein's friend, right?
Well, they probably know. They probably know each other, by the way. I'm sure they probably do.
We'll definitely get into that in the full 1 o'clock hour. But let's go to Larry in Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita here, Larry.
Hi, Curtis. Hi, Rita.
Hey, Larry.
Regarding the debate the other night, would Bill de Blasio ask Nicole, not once, twice, do you think Donald Trump is a good president for this city? She should have took a breath and said, New York City is the number one target in America for terrorism. If I had my druthers, I'd rather have Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton at the helm at a time of terrorism.
Actually, you know what, Larry? That's actually a good answer, too. She could have turned it and said, and she seemed like she wasn't prepared for that question. And it was asked in a different way for New York City. It sounded like it was something that was not rehearsed in her pre-debate prep, but that would have been a fantastic answer.
No, I truly believe she not only was prepped for it, but when you get personal, when you take umbrage to the fact that the media is going to ask you that question, you lose it.
Yeah, well, she shouldn't have.
And
she shouldn't have.
That's why I, along with Crane's New York and a lot of other people who have followed Nicole on the campaign trail, said, got to brief up. You got to start studying the issues. You can't just attack the mayor.
Well, she's got another chance, November 1st.
That's right, on the stage at Channel 2, and I have a feeling they might eliminate Bo. Oh, yeah, they're not happy with him.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
Attorney, radio talk show host, Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The new midday show. 77 WABC.
Swinging out in Hollywood, the freakazoids, trendoids, and jet setters, because the tsunami of women claiming that they've been perved, and now men claiming they've been perved by other powerful men, is continuing. But as well, Hyatt Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to do the broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. We are without Ebony K. Williams today. And in the house is our political director, Rita Cosby. And right on time, because she has gotten a special interview with actress Anna Wilding, who was another potential victim of Harvey Weinstein. Had it not been for an intervention. But before we get to that, Rita, and your interview with Anna, let's go yesterday outside of the home of Harvey's daughter, not far from Beverly Hills, where Harvey was staying. A 911 call had been made to the police department in which the daughter had said that Harvey was very depressed, suicidal, although later on she amended that after the cops had left her home. And then Harvey was schlepping outside. I don't know what he was doing, maybe communing with the cactus. And TMZ bagged
I think the
him.
Cactus is the only one who wants to talk to him these days. But
and naturally TMZ, because they bagged him and tagged him.
We're glad to see you're doing okay.
Thank you.
Guys, I'm not doing okay.
You're not?
I'm trying. I got to get help, guys. You know what? We all make mistakes. Second chance, I hope. Okay?
No problem.
Thanks, guys. And you know what? I've always been loyal to you guys.
Awesome.
Not like those bricks that treat you like shit. I've been a good guy.
Oh my god, that last part just gets to me every time I hear it.
Within hours, Annie was on a Learjet leaving Burbank Airport, headed to parts unknown in Arizona to a sex addict clinic where he had to throw himself on the cactus and say, yes, I am a sex addict. I need to be healed.
Yes, and I just, we all make one little mistake there. Come on, there's 32 women so far that have come forward. And then for him to use this whole thing, Curtis, and you know, this, I want to hear what the listeners have to think about this, because that back half there just gets to me as a woman when I hear him say, oh, I've always been good to you. It's sort of that whole, like, you know, be quiet again. I've always been good to you. Now you be good to me. And that was what he's been accused of trying to use this leverage over people. And that's where sexual harassment gets so ugly and so terrible, when it's someone who has power and control over you. And he's sort of kind of illuminating that again. He's coming out and going, okay, well, you know what? I've been good to you. So, haha, please be good to me during this little difficult period in my life.
And that's how he was able to escape all those years. An indictment in either California or New York for preying on starlets.
And by the way, London's also, there's word that London is also looking into it, because he traveled all over the world and did these deals all over the world.
But what he would do is he would feed the beast, whether it's TMZ or Page Six or any other gossip columns or major publications. He would give them dirt, valuable dirt that he and only he would know. And then they would exchange information. So it was a quid pro quo. Scratch my belly, I'll scratch your belly.
And he would also squash stories, because there's allegations out there that he would say, hey, listen, I understand you guys are working on this. I would appreciate you not doing this. And by the way, I have a new movie coming out, or I have a book project that maybe you're interested in.
How about an exclusive interview with Matt Damon?
Yeah, would you like
it? Ben Affleck.
Yeah, exactly. Would you like this? I can help you. So you maybe that little story that you're working on, I'm hearing, maybe that will go away.
But you have a story today that's in the Daily News, that you were able to interview a woman who almost became what might have been number 33, 34. Who knows? The numbers are climbing el rapido. But the actress Anna Wilding, how did you first meet her? And then if you'd be kind enough to play some of those cuts.
Absolutely. And I've known Anna for a number of years. And in fact, she gave a statement to James Edstrom, who is TimesSquareGossip.com, who does a lot of this, you know, good celebrity gossip stuff. And when I saw it, I went, whoa, wait a minute. That sounds like something interesting. And I reached out to Anna. I have known Anna for a long time. I've known her actually for decades. She's an actress. She's an award-winning actress. She's a director. She's a producer. And she gave her first exclusive interview with us here on 77 WABC. And what she described in vivid detail, she remembered it very clearly. She said, look, it was 1999. I was at Cannes Film Festival. You know, a lot of hoity-toity celebrities, producers, everybody's there. Certainly Harvey Weinstein is there as a head of Miramax and also the Weinstein Company now. But so all they're pitching, you know, films, actors, they're all talking, lots of drinks, socializing, the whole thing goes on. Well, there's an event there at Cannes Film Festival, and suddenly she's talking to Harvey Weinstein. He wants to have a meeting with her. She goes into an elevator. She's about to go into this elevator and go up in the elevator. And she says at that moment, two male colleagues come over and physically block and stand between her and Harvey Weinstein. And she said she remembered it clear as day. She said, oh, here I'm talking to this head of the studio. She's thinking it's an important meeting. You know, maybe wants to talk about a part for her or some film. And here's what she told me. Here's a little clip of what she told me.
I found myself at the Cannes Film Festival, which I was going to every year, at the bottom of an elevator with Harvey on my way up for what I thought was a meeting. And it was just Harvey and I alone. I don't know why he was alone or why I was alone. We were both people who had a lot of people around us usually. And we were alone at this elevator, and I was about to go up for a meeting with him, and he was saying hello. And literally two colleagues of mine, two male friends, came up to me and literally stood between me and Harvey. They literally barged their way between me and Harvey and said, no, Harvey, not Anna, or no, Harvey, not this one. It was quite extraordinary. And I walked away with my two friends and did not go up the elevator with Harvey. And I'm glad now, because I was quite a strong woman. It wouldn't have occurred to me that he would even dare try that with me, because I'd made it quite known around town that I wasn't a casting couch girl.
But then it went further, Curtis.
Whoa, whoa. Not this time, Harvey. So the two guys...
Not this one.
...know that he's a predator.
Yes.
And they're telling Harvey Weinstein, not this one. And they've obviously known of other ones.
Exactly.
Who have been caught into his vicious predatorial web.
Not this one. No, not Anna. Not this one. And they could, and it's just him going up in the elevator with a woman. That alone was giving off huge alarm bells. Huge alarm bells. And so I asked her to continue the story, Curtis. And I said, so then what happened? Are you sure that exactly what you and I are saying? And she went further and said, this is what the two colleagues who she knows well told her soon afterwards at that same event. And was it, when you say that, did it sound like, okay, well, they knew what was to come and that they at least anticipated that something like that was going to happen?
They absolutely did. And they pulled me aside later and they spoke to me afterwards directly. And they said, Anna, you are not safe to be alone with Harvey. And they were very clear with me not to ever be alone with Harvey. They were very clear that I was not to sort of, it was not safe to be with Harvey. And I think that was probably one of those prominent eye-openers I had about how predatory his behavior was actually.
And Curtis, this is 1999. And she said that later agents, managers, a number of other people told her the exact same thing, that it was common practice. And she said that there were so many people who were complicit in this. And she also said, I'm calling on everybody who knew about it, who turned a blind eye, who enabled him, that they need to come out and admit their guilt, because she said it was well known not to be alone with Harvey Weinstein.
Well known, but apparently not by Meryl Streep, the queen of Hollywood.
Yeah, people who were around him much more than Anna Wiley. I'm about to say Anna Wintour because you were saying Anna Wintour
last
month. But there were so many people, and she knew him, but it wasn't like she was best friends with Harvey Weinstein. And yes, you have to wonder what was going on with the Meryl Streeps, with all these other people who knew him even better than Anna Wiley.
Well, look at what happened with Oliver Stone. He came to the defense of Harvey Weinstein.
That was the weirdest defense I have ever seen. He was at an event, and he was asked about it. Oh, let's not jump to conclusions.
And then all of a sudden, one of the women he preyed on, meaning Oliver Stone, surfaced. And now Oliver Stone is in retreat.
Yeah, now it's like, oh, well, wait a minute. You know, first of all, you know, I understand that, you know, if you've known the guy for a long time and say you are blindsided, say we give all these people the benefit of the doubt that they didn't know, because sometimes people are different people to different, you know, they see certain victims or they see people as vulnerable and they go after them. So I will give some of the people in Hollywood a pass and others.
All right,
but you know what? But to say, wait a minute,
are you gonna
almost go after the victims. Don't you dare do that.
Are you going to give Hillary a pass? Are you going to give Barack Obama and Michelle Obama a pass? Are we to believe that they were totally disconnected from hearing any of the rumors about the behavior of Harvey Weinstein? And then again,
well, and their thing is they didn't even come out afterwards. Even if, say, you did not know. And again, some people are different. There are people who act a certain way. I've seen people who act a certain way and then they see somebody else and they act a whole way different. So there are people that are like that. But for them, in that case of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, for them not to come out and condemn the behavior once all these accusers came forward, for those days of silence, that's bad.
Well, finally, Quentin Tarantino has come out and said, oh, he is so upset.
He's heartbroken.
Heartbroken that Harvey turned out to be a perv. But you know who we haven't heard from? We haven't heard from the second family, at least it was during the Barack Obama administration. Jay-Z and Thunder Thighs Beyoncé. Now, a lot of people are saying, what does Jay-Z have to do with this? Jay-Z was a partner with Harvey Weinstein in many films, not only that have been done, but upcoming films. And Jay-Z has been quiet.
Yeah, it's been unusually quiet.
And Beyoncé has been quiet. And normally they would take to Twitter. They would have some kind of commentary. They were sort of like the second family to the first family, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. But the silence on the part of some is deafening.
Yeah, and to me, that I think, you know, I will sometimes give people the pass. I mean, when you hear from Anna Wilding, and after this discussion with her, it was like everybody knew in Hollywood and that it was discussed for years and years. And again, she said not just Harvey. She said there are other people that she called, quote, predators too as well. But, you know, for these people to not come out now and say, how dare they? This looks terrible. Even if you still want to try to be careful because he's your friend. When you see 32 women now, and now Anna Wilding saying that she almost became one, you know, based on what her friends were saying to her, you know, it is voluminous.
It's
voluminous.
It's
what
Bill,
more do you need?
It's Bill Cosby, too. Remember,
yes.
Cosby had his enablers. 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to John in Rockland. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Johnny?
Hey there.
Yes,
so,
John.
With Harvey and the TMZ and other press and, you know, trading favors or whatever, maybe they were a big advertiser and these media outlets didn't want to lose that money. But I don't get how Donald Trump, or alleged molester in chief right now, how he's escaped all the scrutiny that Harvey's getting. It's like that, you know, the press doesn't owe him anything. They're not his friend.
But wait, John, there's a huge difference between, even if you talk about the Access Hollywood tape where he says, oh, I go over and I, you know, we haven't heard women saying, well, this is exactly what he did to me. And these allegations, by the way, that you've heard with Harvey, three of them are allegations of rape. I mean, this is very serious, very serious. And but it is interesting that
not only that, but remember, Harvey settled with eight women.
Yes.
Why would you settle with somebody if you were innocent? And notice with the president, there have been no settlements. There have been no tapes of conversations
and
that
were
made
words
between a woman and Donald Trump.
And remember,
no
Curtis,
civil
the locker
suits,
room talk.
No
locker
criminal
room talk.
Charges, right? So it's a world different.
It
now,
is
the president a pig when it comes to women? Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. But you can't put him in the league of Bill O'Reilly, Roger Ailes, and in this case, Harvey Weinstein, because all three of those pigs settled with the claimants.
But there's a difference, too, and also as someone who worked at Fox for many years, these allegations with Harvey Weinstein are specifically horrible because they are people putting pressure on, and these three allegations of rape, you cannot, that you think about it, there are allegations that women say,
different.
Oh, it's incredibly
they
different.
Want, when women you hear, wanted to work at Fox News
but
Channel,
they are saying,
and there was the casting couch, Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly's casting couch.
They are saying in this case that, listen, you have sex with me, that you were forced to have sex to the degree now where they are physically looking at charges and allegations of charges. RICO possibly. I mean, these are very, very serious charges against Weinstein. I take it to a whole other level.
All three pervs. 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
To the phones we go. No Ebony K. Williams today, but Rita Cosby in the house. Let's go to Mike in New Rochelle. Welcome to Curtis and Rita here on WABC. Mikey.
Thank you for taking the call. Let me preface my comment by saying anyone that's extorted for a job, be it with sex or drugs or money, obviously needs to be investigated criminally and or put in jail.
For sure.
I have to say this. Even though as horrible as this is, the women here have some culpability in this. They are adults. As they're telling us, we all knew this was going on, or they all knew it was going on, but yet they went into that trap, and now they come out, and they're complaining, which they rightfully should. But conversely, they have some culpability in this.
But wait a minute. But, Mike, and listen, Mike, I think that there are some women who do take advantage of those situations, and they do it voluntarily. What they're saying here is in this case, and one of them, by the way, Kate Beckinsale, she's now, you know, beautiful woman, 44. She says when she was 17 that Harvey Weinstein brought her into a room, and she thought it was a meeting on something, and she declined alcohol. And then she said when he was trying to come on to her, she said, "I have to go to school in the morning." That she was just 17 years old. That you're telling, you can't tell. But wait a minute, you can't tell me in that case that she's voluntarily, you know, come on.
She's the exception, not the rule. There are those there that go into this semi-knowing what they're getting involved with. They can't just sit there and play totally stupid.
And Mike, I will give you, hang on one second, Mike, because by the way, I will give you credit, and it's interesting for a woman to say this, but I do think there's some to that, because Anna Wilding, who I did the interview with, who was saying that she could have been a victim and that her friend stepped in, she also said kind of what you were saying there, Mike, in the sense that there were some women who were aware of it, who dated Harvey or who made claims, and some of them who she even says are making claims now that she believes had a consensual relationship, or at least at some point it was consensual. But the bottom line is no means no. And, you know, and maybe there are some who are complicit, and that may come out, and they should not be complicit. Shame on them.
Just look at his personal contract with his company Miramax,
oh,
2015.
Oh, that makes me sick, Curtis.
In which it's right in writing for everyone to see. Harvey, you're allowed to perv on women, but, you know, if we get hit, you know, our HR division, you're going to pay the fines, you're going to pay the costs, you're going to pay the settlements.
Well, and also they may pay
what the hell
more
is
than that. Yeah, what kind of, and the other thing is, too, the business thing, as you're talking about, too, Curtis, the other thing that was just coming out recently is that, you know, the head guy, the Lin-Manuel, you know, of Hamilton, that there was word, I saw some report that he was saying, look, I don't want to do business now with the Weinstein company. So they may get hit in so many different directions. Why did you craft a contract like that? What were you aware of when you crafted that contract? How culpable are you there, if indeed you are? And then could they lose now lots of business? Because a lot of people are saying they just don't want to have the Weinstein name attached to any project in the future.
Let's quickly go to Mike in Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Rita here on WABC. Mikey.
I got a good one for you.
We're ready.
I'm 65 years old. I was born and raised in Flushing, Queens, one of the Hill Boys. The girl that knew Harvey Weinstein, after he became famous, they were talking about him like no tomorrow. He was nothing but a gavoon. He was disgusting. Nobody would date this guy.
So wait a minute, Mike. Did you know him, or are you a friend who knew him, or what?
No, we all knew him. Everybody knew him. It was a small neighborhood over there in Flushing. But he had a reputation. They used to call him the Mama Luke. He was, you know, Curtis, you know what that
is. Oh, yeah, mama's boy, mama's boy.
Oh, what a piece.
And
really.
I think, Mike, without being a shrink, a psychologist, or a psychiatrist.
Or a psychopath.
I am a psychopath.
I was going to say, I had to get that in there.
You can probably trace a lot of what he's doing now. You know, these shower scenes, these bathing scenes, coming out with his erector set, you know, all protruding. To something that happened, Mike and Rita, between he and his mother. Years and years ago.
I don't know where I want to go with that one, but let's put the mother aside. What I will say is that there obviously was something going on that he had this vision. And look, he's not an attractive. I've met Harvey a number of times.
I have too, but it's either that or we go back to Dr. Spock. He wasn't properly potty trained, right, Ken Duff?
Yeah, we'll ask Ken Duffy about
is that.
Is that
what Dr. Spock said?
Ken's an expert on this.
All problems with young men start with potty training. He probably had to use an outhouse.
Maybe the toilet maker.
And they gave him a copy of the Herald Tribune to wipe his tuchus with, right? And it traumatized him.
Yeah, but he's going to have to come up with some solution because he made a, quote, a little mistake, you know? I mean, that's what he's saying. I would love to be a fly on the wall at his Arizona clinic now in rehab. Okay, so now let's go to client number 3. What happened to you?
But anyway, on that note, let's get our news headlines and updates from Ken Duffy.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments. The new midday show.
Up on the law and a law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
That's right. 140 and the ever widening web around Harvey Weinstein and other indiscretions of the pervs and the pigs in Hollywood grow. We have now Amazon involved. That's right, Jeff Bezos himself. Rose McGowan, who said that Harvey Weinstein had raped her, actually went to the production director of the Amazon Studios.
Yeah, Roy Price.
And said, Harvey raped me. She had a pending project in front of Amazon Studios, squashed.
And this is where I think it gets really ugly, Curtis, because especially if you can show that it hit you in the pocketbooks. Obviously, a claim of rape is a serious claim and should have been looked into. And she claims that this guy, that the executive basically said, well, unless you have physical proof, which, you know, you don't usually have in those kind of cases, unless you're Monica Lewinsky and have a dress or something. And again, that was consensual, but still, unless there's some sort of proof, he said, okay, well, too bad, basically. And then she claims, again, this is her claim, that he then killed the project that she was developing. And they basically didn't want to do anything with her. And then she said she was also blocked on Twitter. And that's this whole sort of blocked on Twitter thing that's happening
today.
Well,
I think that's why you're here today, because, you know, the queen of Twitter.
Ebony K. Williams,
Ebony
my bud.
Williams,
yeah.
And I think she thought that boycott the Twitter protest today meant boycott the show.
No, although, it just meant boycott Curtis. That was
that's
all.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I have to get clarification. But that same pig there at Amazon who's in charge of Jeff Bezos' Amazon Studios is Roy Price. And guess what?
He's suspended.
Not because of Rose McGowan confiding in him that Harvey Weinstein had raped her. And you know he told Jeff Bezos. But he perved off a starlet himself.
Oh, yeah. This story is wild. And it's at Comic-Con, of course, which just took place here in New York City. And apparently a woman who is a, quote, lesbian producer, that's how they describe her, came forward and says that he made a number of inappropriate comments to her when they were on a business trip at Comic-Con, telling her that at one point, you will like my blank, you know. So that probably coupled with the Rose McGowan
now,
stuff was enough.
Do you think,
come on.
Do you think that Roy Price, who was the head of Amazon Studios, did not then pick up the phone and tell his very dear friend Jeff Bezos
about Rose McGowan?
That Rose McGowan is claiming that Harvey Weinstein raped her.
I don't think he told, Jeff Bezos about what he said at Comic-Con.
No,
but
I'll bet you
passed
that on. How could you not? These guys are like washwomen. You know, they trade gossip all the time.
And not only that, not only just the gossip, when you have somebody, and Rose McGowan's a well-known actress, you know, a known person to them, developing a project, it's not even just wash talk. It's also serious money talk. There's so many layers to this. I agree with you. I find it unbelievably hard to believe that he didn't go to Jeff Bezos and say, hey, guess what? Here, first of all, you got to hear these allegations. And by the way, she's got a project. And then now the fact that she says that that project was killed right after that. This is where you get into this whole legal realm. Because first of all, there's the legal allegations of, you know, was she indeed raped? That's now being looked into. That and other cases of allegations against Harvey Weinstein are being looked at by the NYPD and also by LA. And now we're hearing also London and some other places because he's traveled all over the place. And these allegations come from different spots. But now there could also be these legal implications of, when I told you this, there are laws on the book that say, first of all, you know, thou shalt not rape is one, you know. But then the second one is, you know, you cannot have a repercussion for making a claim of sexual harassment or something even much more serious than this case.
Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. Let's go to Mindy first up in the queue from Terrytown. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Mindy.
Thank you so much for taking my call, which might surprise you. Okay, we're dealing with an old boys club, which is old as the hills, but is what's really pissing me off is the sheer number of women coming forward now when it's safe. Why didn't they go to the police? Why didn't they go to the newspapers?
Well, Mindy, on behalf of the aspiring Italian starlet, she did, in fact.
She did. That's right.
Yeah, and by the way, some of the stories didn't go through in the media. That's a lot of it. I agree with you, Mindy, that some of them, yes, should have come forward sooner. On the other hand,
let's look at that one story.
Yeah, where it got killed.
An aspiring Italian starlet goes to the NYPD. She goes to a precinct after Harvey molests her. He assaults her, grabs her breast. She goes right to the NYPD. They do the right thing. They call in Sex Crimes Unit. Sex Crimes Unit sits her down, says,
give a wire,
look,
right?
I know you don't want to go back and see this guy, but if he calls you, you got to go back. We're going to wire you up, and you got to get him into a conversation. And that's exactly what she did.
And we hear that also. Remember, right. Now we hear it.
He admits to having done it before.
Yeah, she says, oh, wait, you did this? Oh, you know, yeah, I do this. It happens, you know. And then just stand there, basically.
Now,
same MO.
Imagine, Rita, this information is then turned on to investigators of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office because the crime was committed in Manhattan County. The investigators vetted out. They say, hey, Cy Vance, our boss, the DA, this is the real deal. This is legit. You should indict him on a misdemeanor charge. Cy Vance looks at all the information. Here's the tape. Refuses. No bill of goods. Then a few months later, a nice fat donation check from Harvey Weinstein's lawyer arrives in the campaign to reelect Cy Vance, Manhattan District Attorney, who had no competition that year running for reelection, as he has no competition November 7th, except now he's got a write-in candidate who just emerged yesterday. We had him on the drive on 5, Mark Fleetner, who ran and lost the Democratic primary to become the Brooklyn DA. He's prepared to move to Manhattan. So at least registered voters in Manhattan County will be able to write in his name. If not, if he didn't jump in, it would have been a coronation of a guy who has been implicated now, Cy Vance, Trump money, Harvey Weinstein money to make cases go away. In fact, there are women outside of his office right now who are victimized, who have been victimized by sexual predators in the past, who want him to resign.
And listen, I know Cy Vance. I do believe that there needs to be a better explanation from him, because what he did say, because he was approached by reporters right after all this, and he said, Curtis, he said, listen, the evidence he did not feel rose to a crime. Again, it sounds like, and according to the NYPD, what I think is interesting is he got the NYPD fighting basically with the DA's office publicly, because the NYPD saying, we had the goods. What did you do? The other thing, the one thing I will defend also Cy Vance on, and I'm not agreeing with him, you know, that it sounds to me like he had the goods. It sounds like this is what she said. He said it on the tape. It's pretty clear cut. We all hear it. But David Boies, who's the attorney, and this is the one area where I also think it's important to recognize, David Boies is one of the most well-known attorneys in the country. That's the attorney who was working with Weinstein, but also represented a lot of other people, gives to tons of campaigns. I think that donation's a little
hard.
You could make the case that he was giving a lot of donations like he does with everyone else. On the other hand, it is fishy.
That's why lawyers should not be making donations.
I agree. That goes to a bigger issue.
To a district attorney that's going to be hearing cases involving your clients.
Yes, you should never be. I agree.
But
I
anyway, let's go to Bob. It's Amy. I'm sorry. Amy was calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here on WABC. Amy.
Hi, guys. You know, the culture of the Democrat Party is you can sexually attack women, rape them, and we'll look the other way as long as you're pro-abortion.
No, Amy.
This is exclusive to
Democrats. How about all the Republican pervs over the years?
This cover-up with NBC and the New York Times.
But excuse me. Is this exclusive to Democrats? What about Senator Bob Packwood? Remember Senator Bob Packwood? Do you know what party he was with?
The
Kissing Bandit who would press up against women, the Republican from Oregon. Did you forget about him?
They covered this rape up for 30
All right, so what you're saying is this is exclusive to Democrats, right, Amy? Men who are perverts are only perverts when they're Democrats, right, Amy?
I'm not saying it's bad on the Republican side, but this is a Democrat.
No. It's both sides. It's a man thing. Men need to keep their rocket in their pocket. If they're going to misuse it, they should lose it. That would be my attitude.
And listen,
castration should be on both sides.
Oh, come on. It's a man thing.
What I'm saying is you don't see women doing this. This is a man's thing. They need to have self-control.
By the way, there are a few allegations of women. And the other thing is, too, now we're hearing these stories about James Vanderbeek and also Terry Crews that they were hit on by men.
Yeah, powerful men.
It's the whole, like, but also mostly in these positions, and we're talking about in Hollywood, it is mostly a male-dominated business in terms of at the top. I mean, you look at it. Who are the studio heads? There are a few women, but mostly men.
Well, you know something? There is a cure. It's old-fashioned.
Firing range?
No, saltpeter.
Firing squad?
For years, men in the military would be fed unknowingly saltpeter in their beans. Saltpeter. And in jail. And it calms you down. You don't have a sexual desire when you have saltpeter. And maybe these kind of guys should have it in their Cheerios in the morning.
Hey, maybe we go back to the old formula. You know, I say a firing squad.
Saltpeter works. 1-800-848-WABC. Rita Cosby, had a conversation with two former Guardian Angels yesterday who are in L.A. now. They're in the film business. They used to be in Vancouver, British Columbia for the Guardian Angels, and that was like a mini Hollywood there.
Are they protecting Harvey Weinstein from bodily harm?
No, but what they are saying is that there are men everywhere in Hollywood, whether they are powerful and well-known or they are climbing the ladder, who have perved women or perved men or even boys or girls. Who are running to clear out their bank accounts to pay hush money because this is the time where there's an insatiable appetite. And you know this as a reporter.
Yep.
This is like everyone is subject to coming on the radar screen. And they're trying to pay off victims now with sizable amounts of money just to get them not to answer any question of any inquiring reporters, whether it's a blogster, a simple blogster, or the New York Times or the Washington Post.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was going online yesterday, and you could see there are a number of these news sites that actually have, hey, listen, if you have a tip or if you have information and you want to be kept even confidential, here's how you submit it. The net is cast, it is wide, and everybody's ducking for cover. And like you said, I'm not surprised those payoffs are happening.
Right, and Ben Affleck, quack, quack. I mean, the women are coming out of the woodwork on him. And then, naturally, there's his friend, Matt Damon, going, I never did an intervention with the New York Times to help Harvey.
I know nothing, Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing.
Bring the noise!
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader,
attorney, radio talk show host,
Fox News contributor Ebony Williams.
On this side of the law.
Both sides have extremists.
On that side of the law.
To the millions, I feel this is problematic.
Turn it up!
Every story in the city matters. Every moment of the day matters. Every conversation matters. Curtis and Ebony. Curtis Sliwa.
Now, putting aside the politics.
And Ebony K. Williams.
They don't make Band-Aids for hurt feelings.
The stories. The moments. The Conversation.
I fought the law and the law won.
The New Midday Show, 77 WABC.
Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Cuando tú me besas con esa destreza, veo que eres malicia con delicadeza. Pasito a pasito, suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
No, 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 don't start switching the dial, because you think this is La Mega o Radio Guado. It's not.
¿Cómo estás todo? ¿Qué pasa?
Please don't start that. We'll chase all of our listeners away.
¿Qué pasa?
But, in fact, it is the entry song as well. High atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com for our discussion about Puerto Rico. Ebony K. Williams is not here today. I think she got a little confused when the actress Rose McGowan said, ladies out there, Twitter users, of which no one is more the queen of Twitter than our own Ebony Kardashian Williams.
She's a pro.
Boycott Twitter because they blocked me yesterday when I was indicting Jeff Bezos and Amazon for enabling my rapist, Harvey
Alleged
Weinstein.
Rapist.
He's a rapist. He's a pig. You know he is. Please don't do an Oliver Stone here. Alleged. But anyway, she's not here today, so maybe she thought she was boycotting the program. And in her place is our political director, Rita Cosby. And Rita, you have two programs, not one, back-to-back, belly-to-belly on Sundays.
We do. And in fact, we have an exclusive with Anna Wilding, who says that she was blocked, she says, thankfully, because two guys, she said, no, not Anna. In other words, she thought at that moment it looked like she was going to be brought alone with Harvey Weinstein. And two friends interjected, two colleagues, she said, who she knew well, said, Harvey, no, not this one. No, not Anna. And she says she believes she could have become another victim to the list.
Now, if I happen to be an insomniac and I haven't gone to sleep on Saturday night, which is quite possible because of the activities, I get to listen to you at 6 a.m., and then so nice, management lets you come back and do it twice at 11 a.m.
How nice of them. They let me come back. They even say, more, Rita. So I'll be back at 11, and you'll hear Anna Wilding. And also, you can go on Twitter and all that other good stuff, too. We have pictures of her and everything else. I've known Anna a long time, Anna Wilding. And she just says that this was rampant in Hollywood and says not just, you know, these allegations against Harvey Weinstein, which she says everybody knew, that everybody was talking about it, and you're never to be left alone with Harvey Weinstein is what she says she was told back in 1999. But she said that it is endemic in the business, and yeah, you're going to hear a lot about what she has to
great
say.
Great exclusive. I read about it earlier this morning in the New York Daily News, and boy, you got to listen to the interview. But one thing we both have in common, Rita Cosby, is we've both been to Puerto Rico.
We have, seguramente.
And for some reason, I don't know what it is about Puerto Rico and our president, Donald Trump. He gets picky, 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 picky about Puerto Rico. And he has done things there in helping in the rescue and recovery of the island that was just clobbered, devastated by Hurricane Maria, that I didn't see him do initially in the campaign. Remember when he and his vice presidential candidate, Pence, went down to Louisiana during the floods and were passing out badly needed goods? That was a good thing.
Yeah, and even, you know, you think of recently, you think of all the images, you know, in Texas and Florida and so forth. And some of it is, I just think some of it is also his reaction, because remember the mayor there in Puerto Rico came out. The mayor there in San Juan was so critical and so blistering of Donald Trump immediately saying, we need help, we need this, we need that, and we're not getting it. She's a Democrat, but she was over the top. And listen, you know, I have sympathy for the mayor in the sense that anybody who's in that situation in Puerto Rico, here it is, 3 weeks after Hurricane Maria. And those images are just horrible. I love Puerto Rico. I've been there many times. And so, you know, you don't win when you have a mayor who's pleading for help and saying, please help us. And instead, he kind of went after the mayor. He should have just said, you know, we're going to try to do whatever we can to help. That, I mean, when you see these images, how could you not?
But the truth be told, the FBI is now investigating many mayors on the island of Puerto Rico because, as was first reported on the Drive Home at 5 by my senior director, Arnaldo Salinas, who has led our rescue and recovery effort by the Guardian Angels there, they were being asked, along with other nonprofits, oh, you have supplies for our village, our town that's been wiped out? Yeah, you can hand them out through our office.
Yeah, well, that's the issue that happens, right.
And immediately, Arnaldo, who grew up on Puerto Rico, no, you don't give any supplies. You certainly don't give any money to any of the elected officials on the island to then disperse to their needy people.
Well, remember after Haiti, too, because remember after the earthquake in Haiti, that was the first thing I thought about, Curtis, because after the earthquake in Haiti, there was all that money that was coming in, and a lot of it through the president's fund. Remember, you know, President Clinton, former president, and also G.W. Bush, all of those guys were banding together. And it turns out a lot of the money that came in with people with good intentions, the money didn't go to the people who needed it. And that happened.
That happens in these places. But this is what the president did. And I don't understand this. It's like there's so many other issues going on, but he gets on his freaking Twitter account.
We'll talk
about that coming up next. And he tweets out yesterday, Puerto Rico survived the hurricanes. Now a financial crisis looms largely of their own making, says Cheryl Atkinson that you just mentioned. A total lack of accountability, says the governor. Electric and all infrastructure was disaster before hurricanes. Congress to decide how much to spend. And then this was the kicker. We cannot keep FEMA, the military, and the first responders who have been amazing under the most difficult circumstances in PR forever. So people were like, huh?
Right.
Now, immediately then, the White House Chief of Staff, General Kelly, who also was being barraged with questions about whether he's leaving, staying, being fired by the Washington Press Corps, was asked about these series of tweets by the president about the fate of Puerto Rico in the future.
This country, our country, will stand with those American citizens in Puerto Rico until the job is done. But the tweet about FEMA and DOD, read military, is exactly accurate. They're not going to be there forever. And the whole point is to start to work yourself out of a job and then transition to the rebuilding process.
I don't think anyone on the island of Puerto Rico expects FEMA or the military to be there forever.
But right, it's getting a little literal, right.
The president understood, or at least advisors convinced them, you better clarify that. And he did that in a breakfast presentation to Value voters earlier today.
We'll be there. We're going to be there. We have... Really, it's not even a question of a choice. We don't even want a choice. We're going to be there as Americans, and we love those people and what they've gone through. And they're all healing. And their states and territories are healing, and they're healing rapidly.
Now, that's the correct tone and posture to take.
Yeah, it's so crazy that they can't get their messaging right. They can't get their tone right on this. It has just been a disaster on top of the disaster that's taking place in Puerto Rico. And I agree with you. It's like, who is guiding these people to say, and listen, yes, of course, they're not going to be there forever. But when you've got these images that are still coming out, here it is, you know, 3 weeks and just the desperation, you say whatever you need, whatever we can do to help it. That's the right message. I don't understand why they can't get it right and sound so insensitive
half the time. I think part of the problem is that a lot of Americans still don't make the connection that Puerto Ricans are just as American as anyone who lives here.
Absolutely,
on the mainland.
Absolutely.
But look, the Mensa candidate, former Governor Rick Perry, now the czar of energy for the Trump administration, keeps referring to Puerto Rico as a country when he talks about it.
And a number of people have done that, which is just, you know, amazing to me that they can't figure out, know their geography and know what is part of America and what isn't part of America.
I want to play you a cut that I shared with our audience last night from our senior director of operations on the island of Puerto Rico, Guardian Angel Arnaldo Salinas, who described how bad it is up in the rural areas, in the places where FEMA and the government have still not gone.
People were trying to flock to only two hospitals open on the entire island because they were getting rashes, and it's obvious that the water is now contaminated. The mudslides have taken pets and animals and homes and even human bodies with it.
You know, my heart just breaks when you hear this. And listen, I covered Katrina. I covered Hurricane Rita. I've covered so many of these hurricanes through the years. And I remember, there's one image that when I hear the body, I remember I was covering Hurricane Katrina. I was in the Ninth Ward. And remember, the levees broke. And literally, bodies were like floating around me when I was on Zodiac with some of the U.S. military guys. And it's heartbreaking. So I can't even imagine what a beautiful Puerto Rico. And you now, and I have been there in much nicer times.
When I opened up the New York Post today, a paper that's very favorable to the Trump administration most times, there was a two-page spread. Weeks after Maria, rural Puerto Ricans are feeling all but abandoned. A reporter from the Post was walking all through these rural areas and only found FEMA on one occasion in 72 hours.
And that's staggering. And there are so many reports like that where you hear that they have, where is the help? Where's the federal help? First of all, it didn't get there right away. And now when they say that they're there, they're barely there in certain spots.
Can we start first in educating the cabinet of the Trump administration, especially former Governor Rick Perry, that no, Rick, Puerto Rico is not a country. Puerto Rico is not a country. I'm almost thinking this guy's like Homer Simpson.
Well, and you know what's interesting? People who have relatives there have come over, and I did a big fundraising event to raise funds for Puerto Rico and also to help those who were afflicted by the earthquake in Mexico. And I had so many folks who are Puerto Rican descent who said to me here in New York, it was a great fundraiser. And I remember they came over to me and they were so upset when the president came out and said, well, it's hard to get to them because it's an island surrounded by water, which, by the way, yes, it does have a lot of water. It is a little more logistically difficult than getting to Texas and Florida and elsewhere.
But
they took offense to it. They said, wait a minute, we're part of America. Come on.
I think this is where most Puerto Ricans took offense to how the president has handled this, even those who voted for him and were big time supporters. It's when he was in that gathering, in that church enclave, when he was visiting San Juan, and he decided, not because he was asked to start throwing the bounty paper towels into the crowd.
Like a football.
And I'm saying to myself, oh, my God.
See, I think it was before that.
Optics.
I think even before the optics, I go back to the whole thing with the mayor. And listen, the mayor was definitely pointing the finger at the president, was definitely upset. But guess what? She's in the middle of the throes of everything happening in Puerto Rico. You know, what's happening there in her area, it's just falling apart. They had no electricity. I'd be pleading for the president's help. That's what a good mayor does. Maybe she got a little personal, but he clearly took it way too personal.
It wasn't Roy Nagin.
He needs to write. Right.
Ray Nagin.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Roy Nagin, of course, mayor.
And I'm stealing money while all this is taking place.
Well,
I'm
that was the whole thing. Oh, my God. That was the worst. That guy, of course, in New Orleans, who missed the ball, and they also said, hey, get this. But the mayor, this is where you say as president, and sometimes, listen, I think the president a lot of times gets unduly criticized and so many things. I think it's so stilted against him so many times. On the other hand, in this case, you are the president of the United States, and if you have a mayor pleading for help, even if she's getting personal, you rise above it. You say, we will try to do whatever we can to help.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, how long should we be assisting the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, island that has been devastated, wiped out? There's no other way of describing it. Anyone who's been in it, wiped out from, you know, San Juan all the way to Ponce to Mayagüez to all parts in between. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And are there limitations in what we should be doing for Puerto Rico? 1-800-848-WABC.
Imus in the Morning.
So far, so good.
And Curtis and Ebony.
You've got good gangs and bad gangs.
I'm going to give it to them.
On air, online, on the app.
This is really good, isn't it?
77 WABC.
No Ebony K. Williams today. Rita Cosby in the house. Let's go first up in the queue to Chris out in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Chris.
Hey, how you guys doing today? I'm glad I'm listening. Great show.
Thank you.
About 13 years ago, back when I was married, I went to Puerto Rico for my 10th anniversary. My wife was half Puerto Rican. I remember landing into Puerto Rico, and I kept saying to myself, "If this is supposed to be like a Commonwealth to be a part of the United States, it's disgusting there. Once you leave San Juan or some of those other little bigger cities or the resorts, it's nothing but a tropical mess."
So what's your point, Chris?
My point is, I mean, are they a part of us or are they not a part of us? Because when I go down there,
Chris, hold on a second. There are areas that remind you of a third world country, like nearby the Dominican Republic, shacks, favelas, colonias. The rural areas, there's a lot of poverty.
There is.
But there are cities like Ponce, Mayagüez, San Juan that obviously are very updated, first world, right? But, Chris, when you travel to San Juan, when you came from the airport, there was a hill along the way, and you see these single solitary slabs. It's United States Military Cemetery. These are men of Puerto Rico who have died in battle for decades on behalf of our country.
I know. I'm not dumb. Spend in war.
Okay. You know? So they have been loyal Americans.
Per and Vieques. Vieques.
But they have, per capita, per person, many Puerto Ricans, now both men and women, join the military and serve honorably. So, yeah, we should be helping them before we help members of third world countries. So think of this, Chris. We send billions to Afghanistan and to the corrupt leaders in Iraq who pocket our money. And what do we get in return? They don't even say thank you, do they, Chris?
I agree with you, but the problem is we can't hold Puerto Rico's hand.
On the other hand, Chris, you talk about how, you know, dilapidated it is, and it is in some parts of the country, you know, of that area of the Commonwealth there. You think about it in America, there's some parts of other parts of America where it's also
land, the Appalachians.
You go to some of those places, it's pretty bad too. But on the other hand, I think you actually highlight, Chris, why we actually need to help them, because they do need help to begin with. They were in an economic crisis even before all of this, and I think it's even more reason to help them.
I say to myself, we give billions to these thieves in Kabul and Afghanistan and in Baghdad and Iraq.
Right, and yet here's part of America.
They've never had a parade or commemoration for Americans who have shed their blood for them. There's never been a thank you. They would just as easily take aid from our enemies as they would us. They're fair-weather friends. We continue to help them. We're not going to help fellow Americans in Puerto Rico.
Exactly, and there's so many great people there. And if anything, we need to give them more help because of the situation they were in. You could tell. I mean, as soon as I saw, oh, my gosh, it's heading towards Puerto Rico, Maria, I was like, this is a part of the United States that definitely is going to need rebuilding.
Next to us, Ken Duffy, he's hoping that Mr. Superstar Puerto Rican Carlos Beltran hits one out tonight for the Houston Astros, maybe just coming up in the late innings as a replacement player or a pinch hitter, and wins the day against our beloved Yankees that he used to play for also, but he played for the Mets. Remember, looked at that strike three. Look at that strike three and prevented you from getting in the World Series.
Never
let you forget.
Ken is hyperventilating
But anyway, on that note, let's go to Joe in Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here on WABC. Giuseppe.
Hey, what's up? What's up, Curtis? Hey, I am so glad you got me on. I mean, listen, half of this is all politics, okay? I lived in Puerto Rico. My oldest was born there. I was through George, same crap. It was less power. You still had people with no roofs begging for FEMA. FEMA came out, gave them their money, and they still had the tarps up on their houses because they didn't put any money into the houses. I paid more in taxes to the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico than I paid for the state of California and the federal taxes. All that money goes into the corruption and the graft and nepotism down there. It is pathetic.
Well, and listen, and Joe, by the way, Joe, you bring up a good point. You bring up a good point. But there are people in need. Don't you agree? There are some who are, come on.
My family's in need down there right now. My family's down there. There are, FEMA's doing the best that they can. I guarantee you in a year from now or 2 years from now, there'll be another storm. We're going to go through the whole process all over again. And everybody's going to look and go, what was fixed? What was done? Didn't we just have a Category 4? The power lines are still, they're not going to improve any infrastructure. They're not going to improve any building codes. They're not going to improve anything. There's three pastimes in Puerto Rico.
Well, and that's where we need some accountability.
Let me hear these three pastimes. What are the three pastimes in Puerto Rico, Joe?
Pastimes are the politics, talking about politics.
True.
Second is medalla beer, drinking at the corner.
That's true.
At every corner. And the third is cashing in that goddamn federal check every first and 15th of the month.
You mentioned the negatives. You haven't mentioned about how many Puerto Ricans have sacrificed their life for our country. There are no positives? Let me tell you something. There are pharmaceutical companies there. Let me tell you something, Joe. Pharmaceutical companies there because they may not be able to produce the drugs that we need, that our parents and grandparents need. A bulk of the pharmaceutical products are produced in Puerto Rico. And, you know, they pay a higher rate of corporate tax on the island of Puerto Rico than they even pay here in America.
They do. And listen, there are some great people there. And jeez. Also, I go back to Vieques, too, the base there. That's a critical base for us, too. I mean, there's a lot of important stuff. And by the way, when he's sitting there talking about the booze, tell me that doesn't happen anywhere. That happens in New York City.
We posted pictures in some of these towns when the Guardian Angels arrived. They had no water, but there were like pallets of beer.
And listen, that happens in a lot of places. And I do
agree. I'm just telling both sides of the story.
And I agree with both sides of the
story.
You need to come in. You need to do accountability. But if you're telling me that that's endemic to just Puerto Rico, I got another thing coming to you. Come on, give me a break.
But let me tell you something. Carlos Beltran, I'm just reminding you, Ken Duffy. Yeah. Remember when he looked at that third strike against the St. Louis Cardinals?
Yeah.
Just remember.
Yeah, curveball.
Eat your heart out.
No.
Anyway, give us the news headlines and updates.
Curtis and Ebony. The stories, the moments. The new midday show.
Up on the law and the law one.
77 WABC and the WABC radio app.
This was the theme song of the Donald Trump campaign that was given authentication by Twisted Sister, meaning Twisted Sister said, yeah, you can use it, Donald, on the campaign trail. And he did, although he purloined other songs artists said, keep your stinking hands off my song. But the major part of the campaign and, in fact, the major part of this administration of the President Donald Trump has been his desire, his penchant, his obsession with using his Twitter account and tweeting. Sometimes it comes in a tsunami, a blizzard.
Sometimes?
Yeah.
I'd say like every day almost.
Right. But in other times, it's sort of like Twitter quiet. But there are staffs of people who are assigned by periodicals all across America and the world just to stay focused on his Twitter account because this is the way he communicates with everyone out there. He wants to forego having to deal with the media, many of which he calls fake news.
Well, and the thing is, it's also so crazy. As the political editor here at 77 WABC, it's like, he'll start tweeting at 5 in the morning, and then it's like midnight. You know, we never had this before. And even though President Obama used social media and it helped him a lot to get elected, in this case, he is obsessed with it. And I think it's an effective tool most of the time.
But I have suggested that General Kelly restrain the president before he goes to sleep. And once he awakes and puts on the Chinese finger traps on him.
I'm sure he's thought of it.
Because now even his most ardent, diehard defenders in poll after poll are coming out and saying, Mr. President, stop the tweeting. This is causing you angst. This is causing the nation all kinds of problems. You've got to give up your Twitter account. And now we're talking sizable majorities, not just of the anti-Trump crowd, but of Trumpers and Trumpets themselves who are saying, we love you, Mr. President. We love your agenda. We support the fact that you want to make America great again. But you got to knock off the Twitter. It's never been this high in terms of the negative response to his tweeting on Twitter to all the twits out there.
Well, one of the things, it's a Quinnipiac poll that just came out, I think you're referring to, and it said that a whopping, it's like 70% of the voters think that he should stop using, especially from his personal account. Remember, he's got the POTUS account,
yes. And
then he's got the real Donald Trump account. And they also talk about how a number of Republicans also are in that batch. But they also still say that he's got great support. He's got 81% of Republicans are approving of him and 12% disapproving. So overall, the Republicans still like him. But what they're seeing is, and this is why, I mean, on one hand, I think there's something that's so effective about it because the media is, I don't think, giving him a fair, you know, they're giving him a hard time. They're clearly from every single different direction. Granted, that is part of our job, is to give any president a hard time, but it's been exceptionally rough on President Trump, and they're going after him. But he gives them a lot of fodder. On one hand, he'll say something on Twitter, and then there's poor John Kelly or somebody else comes out with a whole different message. And so it's sending this whole mixed messages, and it's so confusing. But I think if he can use it and just sort of streamline it, it's a great tool. So I say he should still keep it and keep doing it, but maybe have it a little more micromanaged.
No, I think he's got to completely give it up. He's addicted. It's an obsession.
Yeah, he loves it. You can tell.
It has to do with when he gets angry. He has these bouts of anger towards individuals, which all presidents have had.
Wouldn't you like to be a fly on the wall to hear a conversation, Curtis, between like General Kelly and the president? Oh, when he's about like, hey, wait, what did you do? Yeah. Remember, it was like right after he became chief of staff. It was like almost hours later, Trump started tweeting again. In other words, nobody's holding me back.
F-bombs must be flying. But, ladies and gentlemen, is it time now that the president of the United States, as he approaches his first year in office, just give up this twittering, tweeting habit that he has and just use the normal ways that presidents have before of communicating to all of us? Or do you want him to continue to tweet away morning, noon, and night, confusing people at times? Totally at times going against what his cabinet members have said just maybe hours before.
Well, and sometimes it even goes against what he says. He'll say something and then he'll say, have to correct it in a press conference. So it is crazy. On the other hand, it's refreshing to know what he thinks, like it or not. It's refreshing.
I'd rather not know what Donald Trump thinks about a lot of things because it really ain't good. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to John, who I believe is calling from Red Hook. Welcome to Curtis with Rita Cosby here today as Ebony K. Williams is away. Thanks for joining us, John.
Hey. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Listen, I think President Trump, the only way to get his message out for real is through tweeting, because 98% of the media just lies about him all the time. He's a good man and he's a great president, and people should just back off with his tweeting. Let him tweet. Who cares? They never gave Obama. The media kissed his butt. They kissed Obama's butt the whole time, okay? And Trump, if he says anything, boom.
Tweet away, yeah, right? Boom. Tweet away.
Right. Exactly. Tweet away. I mean, it's the only way to get his own honest truth out.
So when you say his own honest truth, so when he's critical of his own cabinet members who have just spent hours, days, weeks preparing a presentation on behalf of our country.
Like what?
Like what? Like Tillerson. Right? Tillerson, I'm meeting with the North Koreans. I'm back channeling with them. Don't waste your freaking time. There's no need to meet with them.
Yeah, because the Koreans are just one way.
Whoa, John.
They oppress their people.
John, so you don't have back channel communications? We've done that all throughout history, John.
Listen, everybody knows you don't like Trump.
Okay? Wait, no. Answer that simple question. It wasn't me who said it. Tillerson said, I am back channeling the North Koreans. We do have communication with them. The president, the very next day, said, don't waste your time. Don't knock yourself out. Are you kidding, John? Not to have any no communication when there's communication available?
Of course there's communication available.
Okay, so why do you call? Why basically do you call out your Secretary of State and say you're wasting your time?
Because he is wasting his time with the Koreans.
Oh, see, yeah. I'm going to tell you both something different. I think some of it is also
orchestrated.
No wonder why
Tillerson called him a moron.
But see, I think some of it is orchestrated, too, because I think they know. Granted, look, I think some of it is an uncontrollable Trump, and he likes to tweet, and he's going to tweet no matter what, clearly, even if there's a general who's hanging over him as the chief of staff, and he's got a couple generals in his cabinet. But I also think it is a fascinating strategy. He's not a dumb man. I think it's a fascinating strategy that he's saying one thing, Tillerson's saying the other. I think some of it is actually orchestrated.
Well, that's why Tillerson called him a moron. You notice he didn't walk that one back.
He said he's staying.
But he When asked, did you call the president of the United States a moron?
Do you want to know how many times people have called other people a moron, even if they don't mean it?
Oh, no, I understand. But you realize that's the kiss of death if you were to call Donald Trump a moron and you're a cabinet member.
The problem is Donald Trump right now, even if he is angry and believing that he did say he's a moron, we don't know that, but believing he did, you know, because you're right, he didn't directly, even though Heather Nauert, his spokesperson, refuted it later.
He could have said, I didn't call him a moron.
Yeah, and I agree. He should have come out and said that. I agree, if indeed that is the case. But Donald Trump, I don't think, wants to make too many changes too quickly right now in his cabinet. It's been like a chess game. Does he want another chess game? Come on.
Let's go to Jen calling from New Jersey. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here at WABC. Jen?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Rita, Trump is refreshing?
Well, I think it's refreshing. What I'm saying, Jen. Oh come
my God.
Jen, you don't think it's kind of refreshing to see him communicating directly with the people?
No, he's an idiot. He's a moron. He sounds like a 12-year-old tweeting his 14-year-old friend down the street. It's ridiculous.
Now you're sounding like Rex Tillerson.
He's not refreshing. He's not refreshing at all. He's just like the worst person to lead this country.
I think there's something refreshing, Jen, whether you're Republican or Democrat. I do. I think there's something refreshing about being able to communicate to the people. And I think that there will be other presidents in the future who will follow his lead by doing this. I think he started a trend.
He doesn't communicate. He's a tweeter, you know, a teen tweeter.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And by the way, he feeds the beast. As much as he says he's talking to all of us, he doesn't want to go through the media.
He loves the media.
The media loves waiting for his tweets.
He does. And listen, he has
more
obviously
than the public does.
Oh, by far. He is a master media manipulator in so many ways. And yes, he has gone off the rails with a lot of the comments and his closest associates. But I think it's great. He's going right to the people.
He's manipulate his way right out of the White House.
Well, I don't know about that. On that poll that we just talked about, it still says that 80% basically of Republicans are still by his side. And you know why? Let me tell you why I think.
That's a minority in the United States. Without independents and Democrats,
he had a lot of independents last time. Yeah, but you know what? Let me tell you what I think why the Republicans still love him. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. And it's two words. Le Cirque. He had a fundraiser here in New York City. He raised $5 million. There are very few Republicans that can do that.
That's because they want to do business with Washington. Money.
And guess what? They may continue.
And they would give the same money to Obama because they want to do business in Washington.
And Obama was reelected.
848 WABC.
You for your midday.
Ebony Williams is here.
Curtis and Ebony. Exclusively.
Bring the noise!
Where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
To the phones we go. It's Mike calling from Queens. Welcome to Curtis and Rita Cosby here on WABC. Mike?
Rita, you sound like a very smart woman.
Thank you very much. Tell Curtis that.
It's refreshing. Curtis, just so he has guys like you and progressive, like fish, like a guppy on the side of the boat over these tweets, is just worth it in that itself. It's wonderful. I love it. It makes you all so upset. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you. Bravo. Mike and I are good friends. Come on,
Mike.
My new best friend.
You love it when your president completely undercuts the Secretary of State who's saying we're communicating with North Korea. You love that, right, Mike?
Yeah, they're headed to a reform party. You're upset, Curtis? What's the matter? You want a tissue? I give you a little blankie or what? You need a blankie? A little puppet face? Or what?
Hey, Mike.
Sounds like a street fight.
What's the over under and point spread that Trump remains president of the United States?
It's probably the same that Yankees winning the World Series, baby. They're winning it this year.
That's not that solid there against the Houston Astros, and
yeah,
I'm a Yankee fan.
Yeah, I'd give it a little more than that.
Anyway, let's go to the phones. It's Bob, who I believe is calling from New York City. Welcome to Curtis and Rita here, Bob.
Oh, hey, Curtis. What's your name?
Yeah, Rita. Oh, lovely Rita Meadermaid, Bob.
Hey, I like Dominic the best. I love Dominic and Curtis together. That's the best show in the world.
Oh, anyway, wait a minute. No girls allowed? What are you, like girls? You don't like Ebony? Come on.
No, that's not true. Dominic and Curtis is great chemistry. They're real good. But let me just say this.
He doesn't get along with the girls? Wait a minute.
No, listen.
He said an anti-girl thing. Curtis, this is an anti-
right.
No. We don't talk to anybody who doesn't like girls.
See, I have to recuse myself from this because if
like
I agree
he doesn't
with
like
him,
Ebony.
Then you'll accuse me of being a misogynist, a sexist.
No, we'll just call you Harvey Weinstein.
No, maybe that's the reason you don't want women around, right? So you don't end up developing perv tendencies like a Harvey
Blame
Weinstein.
Blame it on the women.